The views expressed in this program are not necessarily those of FMR.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. The focus is very much on ballet, I must say, because I have in the studio with me a South African ballet dancer who's now retired and who had a truly illustrious career as a principal dancer with Cape Hair Ballet here in Cape Town, and he became well known as a dance notator, teacher, journalist, critic, and an extraordinarily interesting life both here and internationally. And I'm talking about Eduard Greyling. Eduard Greyling, welcome to People of Note. It's great to have you here at last.
Oh, thank you very much. It's very nice to be here.
Are you genuinely retired? You're not doing little things on the side? Because so many people say they're retired, but they keep working.
Well, no, I am retired now.
Right.
I am retired now. Well, I'm still involved with the Tshaketi Society, which I'm the patron in Southern Africa.
Oh, you're the patron in those. Okay. Edward, won't you just explain what the Tshaketi Society is? Because it's a specific style or school of ballet dancing, isn't it?
Yes, well, it was started. I mean, Enrico Tshaketi was the dancer who started a studio in London and trained many people in Britain. So he became famous, he taught in a very small studio and became famous for many people to go over there to study for a while. And that was also a time before the RAD was formed. So it's the Royal Academy of Dance, hand in hand with the Tshaketi Society. But the Tshaketi Society style is very specific, and it's adhered to by all the teachers and the people trained in that style. But it is not exclusively the only style.
No, I'm sure. Yeah. For the uninitiated like me, what would be the difference between someone who's a Tshaketi dancer, trained dancer, and someone who isn't?
I think in many ways, if I look at it very carefully, it's the way the arms move, the way the arms are held in certain positions and moving from one position to another. And there are also specific steps that are still done to this day that were done by Tshaketi's pupils in those days.
When we talk about Tshaketi, what period are we talking about? When did he live?
Well, he was a dancer with the old Russian school, and I mean, this was beginning of the century.
Oh, right.
And, it was very interesting that recently I was involved in the school production, a ballet school production of Sleeping Beauty, and reading up again about Tshaketi himself, he was the original Carabosse.
In the original ballet?
In the original ballet. And
okay.
Not only the Carabosse, he also did the Bluebird in the same performance, which was remarkable. So he was the character dancer, but he was a very short, stockily built dancer.
Mm-hmm.
But with an amazing technique in those days.
Yes, and being short as a ballet dancer, as a male ballet dancer, can be a bit of a problem, can't it? I mean, one of the things I read about you was that because of your height and your athletic build, you were sort of automatically a leading man. I mean, obviously you've trained, obviously.
Well, I think there are dancers that are taller than I am, but I think I was ideal for the general sort of ballerina height. But it worked out fine. I mean, I started off dancing with my first partner in the ballet company was Elizabeth Trichardt.
Oh, yes,
and,
whom we know well here at Fine Music Radio.
Yes, and we worked very hard. I mean, we did Swan Lake practically my first year in the company. We did Swan Lake the whole year, and we toured the whole year. And we did lots and lots of performances. So, and Elizabeth was my partner, but that was years before Phyllis, when Phyllis and Gary Byrne started dancing with the company again. They came over from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at Gary Byrne stopped dancing and was getting more into the choreography, I was teamed up with Phyllis.
We're talking about Phyllis Spira.
Phyllis Spira, yes.
And that went on for a while. I mean, you were famous as a couple, weren't you? As Phyllis and Edward, sort of a glamorous couple on the stage.
Well, yes, it somehow our bodies somehow worked together and we could think together and we heard. This is the other very important thing, is that if two partners hear music slightly differently, and I mean people have got slightly different musicalities in the way they interpret music, but with Phyllis and myself, we felt it the same way and we heard it the same way. So I think that was the magic behind it.
I've never thought or knew that. And of course it makes sense, doesn't it? Because phrasing, rhythm, all those sorts of things could be heard in different ways and cause a different reaction in your body.
Yes, like a musician. A musician plays, each musician feels the music slightly differently. I mean, one person's got to be very aware of it all the time as the conductor.
Yes, well, of course. There's a lot I want to ask you about all the places you've been, all the roles you've played, Edward. But since we spoke about ballet, Sleeping Beauty, but your first piece of music is Swan Lake, the Act Two Pas de Deux. And there's an interesting story, I gather, around this as to why you've chosen it.
Well, it's a beautiful piece of music, and I always found it very haunting. It was always like a ghost behind the actual phrases. Mm-hmm. And it was always something in the back of my mind that I couldn't understand. And more recently, I read up about it and discovered that apparently the opera that Tchaikovsky was starting to write was called Undina. He later on wasn't very happy with it and he trashed it. But they discovered, I think, three pieces, parts of it that they could recreate. And one of these in Undine, it's exactly the same as the second act, the pas de deux in Swan Lake. It's the male and the female voice, you know, echoing each other. And when it now makes total sense.
I was going to say, it must have fallen into place
yes. After
all these years.
Yes.
Gosh. Okay, so let's listen to that. Here's the Act Two Pas de Deux from Swan Lake by the great Tchaikovsky. The glorious music of Tchaikovsky. That's the Act Two, Pas de Deux, from the Swan Lake Ballet, and it was the first choice of my guest here on People of Note this week, the distinguished ballet dancer Eduard Kreling, whom, as we've discovered, is retired after a long, and I use the word again, distinguished life. So, Eduard, I want to understand now where all this came from. You were born in Germiston, weren't you? Where did the ballet thing come from?
Well, the ballet actually, I was born in Germiston, but my parents moved down to the Cape at some stage. We eventually ended up living in Belleville. And I was in the Belleville North Primary School. And somehow I also started playing, you know, taking music lessons at the school.
And was there any music in your family? Sorry to interrupt.
Well, I think somewhere in not that anybody played anything, but I think inherently there was probably music in the blood, because I'm a relation of Louis Heinemann as well.
Oh, are you indeed?
Yes, his grandfather was my mother's eldest brother.
Gosh, this, so, as they say, a small world.
Yes.
And he's also about to retire, by the way, after 25 years with the orchestra.
Oh, remarkable that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was, they started doing school pantomimes, and, you know, in those days there was a lot in primary schools. And in Belleville we had the new Civic Center also built, just down the road from where I lived and also not far from where the school was. And we were doing a school play, or musical rather, and I was the lead.
Oh, yes.
Prince Langtoy, who arrived from the wars to meet his, to come back to his cherry bride or ever and marry her. And I had to kind of dance and sing in this. And that was before I even knew about dancing at all.
Oh, that's interesting.
No training at all, no. But it was I think what attracted me, or probably what got me cast, was my interest in music. Because that was my big love then. Mm-hmm. And playing in the streets those days, you know, it was quite different from now, where you can't play in the streets like we used to anymore. My friends were girls from across the road, and they had another friend by the name of Avril Lowe, who was Jennifer Lowe's sister. And Jennifer lived not far from us.
And just for the sake of our listeners, Eduard, let me say that Jennifer Lowe is who we now know as Jennifer Hart, who still does programs for us here on Fine Music Radio. And she was your teacher at one stage.
She said she was going to do a ballet display in the Civic Center, where they had seen me performing in the school production.
Yes, yes.
And I said, fine, yeah, I'll join in, I'll do whatever. And she taught me a little Russian dance, which is the Russian music, the Russian dance from the Nutcracker.
Yes, with the flute.
Yes, and, you know, that's when I got hooked.
My goodness.
And then, continued the ballet classes.
Can you remember what age you would have been then?
I think I was probably... it was the end, but standard 5, standard 6.
Oh, yes, that's the age.
Yeah.
Okay.
And doing regular classes in a very nice studio, which was the Presbyterian Church Hall in Belleville, where they are still teaching ballet classes in that same hall. And I visited just the other day, and it was quite remarkable, you know, that, you know, you come back to the place where you started off.
But that must have been a rather curious experience for you, and to know that they're still doing ballet and you seeing these young people where you were all those years ago.
Yes, and the only thing that was removed was the stairs and the front bit of the stage. Mm-hmm. But the hall was still the same.
So, Eduard, then where did it go from there? So now you'd started your ballet lessons formally, and then what happened after that?
Well, I ended up doing classes at UCT Ballet School. Also because there was one of Jennifer's other pupils who was doing class there as well. And I went along and had a look at their classes as well. And they actually wanted me to join in their classes. And Pamela Crimes was the first teacher that I worked with there. So I concurrently, I was still training with Jennifer and did classes then at UCT. And as a result of that, I ended up in UCT production. You know, which is UCT Ballet, which then became KPA Ballet after that.
That's right, because that's where it began, didn't it, at UCT, and then moved across as KPA.
Yes, and that was my home for many years at the UCT Ballet School.
Many years. And that's where you had the partnerships with Elizabeth Trickard and then with Philip Spira.
Philip Spira, yes, and that's where it all began. And
I see even David Poole featured in your... In your youth,
well, you know, in those days, David Poole was our ballet master, and he ran the company. In those days, we worked from 9 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock at night because we only had one studio, which we could use. And the company, apart from the company doing quarter ballet practice, they also had to have separate rehearsals for the principals. Mm-hmm. And David was remarkable in the way he spent hours on the smallest movement and the smallest gesture and talking about everything, about partnership all the time. And he took a lot of time. And those first year was with Elizabeth Trichot. And I remember starting class at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I was living in Belleville in those days and taking the train in. So
an early rise.
Early rise and a late sleep, you know, because we worked till 9 o'clock and then you used to have to take the train home at the end.
Gosh. In those days, the days you were talking about, was there then a huge interest in ballet? Were people coming up through the ranks?
It was. You know, UCT Ballet was, before the new ballet school was built, UCT Ballet School was very popular already because Dulcie Hazard started that, many years ago.
That's right.
They had a big hall, which was actually a military, built for the military, and they had bungalows across the road on the UCT premises, which was also called the bungalows, where people during the wartime were also lived, and they were trained then in the hall. So that particular studio was very vast, and most of those dancers who were Patricia Miller, people like became famous like that, and overseas companies were the people who went to the Royal Ballet. You know, because after the war, Britain was rather starved of healthy ballet dancers, and many of the South Africans went overseas and joined the company. So the top dancers of the Royal Ballet in those days were South Africans, and I think a Canadian here and there.
Right, goodness me.
Probably an Australian as well.
I want to find out soon about your international career, Edward, but now you've chosen another pas de deux here as your next piece, and this is from Le Corsaire. Tell me a little bit about this and why you've chosen it.
Well, you know, it's actually, I still have a little video of Phyllis and myself doing that the last time when she was 44 and I was 40. And, you know, and...
Which is old, isn't it, for a ballet company?
Normally, yes. I mean, some people like Fontaine, you know, went on for a long time, but she always had younger partners.
Yes.
But for us, it was quite... risque, because you know, when you get an injury at an older age like that, normally older people go into character roles sort of flow into character roles. But we were still used because, you know, it was still a box office draw.
Yes,
you know,
indeed.
And,
I remember.
You know, it was in this particular theater, you know, where we are talking now.
Yes, goodness me. All right, let's then listen to this music from Le Corsaire. It's music by Ricardo Drigo.
Thank you.
As I said at the beginning of the program, we're concentrating on ballet this week, and that was the pas de deux from Le Corsaire, the composer Ricardo Drigo, and another choice of my guest, Eduard Kreling, a retired distinguished ballet dancer. We're talking about your colorful past, Eduard, and I said I'd like to talk about your international career because there you were. You joined Cape Ab now as a principal dancer, and yet you left Cape Town, traveled to Europe, took ballet classes with Ellen Ward in London, Ivan Kramer. These were big names then. So for a young man from South Africa, that must have been quite an experience.
Well, Eileen Ward was the person. She was trained in also in the Russian style and was a sought-after teacher. Mm-hmm. And at the time, the first time I actually went to London on a holiday, but we were also going to do a lot of classes, and I traveled with John Simons and with Phyllis Spire. Through Phyllis, of course, we could do class with the Royal Ballet, and because, you know, the Royal Ballet name was, I mean...
Terribly exciting for you, surely.
Yes, it was incredible for us, but yeah. In that first class I was in, there were very few people, and Eileen Ward herself was the main reason why we wanted to do class there. And there was another, apart from John Simons and myself, there was another male in the company, and that was who was then in the class, and that was the famous Rudolf Nureyev.
Wow, really? Was he famous then?
He was then. Oh, of course, you know, he was famous man, right from the beginning, practically. Monica Mason was, of course, one of the people who was, you know, principal with the company at the time, and she's from South Africa originally.
So you obviously had a chance to watch Nureyev at work.
Well, in class.
It
was quite remarkable that, you know, one... The strange thing was with dancers is that the times when I used to do class with people in London, there was a woman called Valentina Pereslavic who used to teach in the dance center. People in the class were from everywhere. They were from different companies. So it wouldn't be unusual for a famous dancer to stand next to you and you wouldn't even know it.
In those days, yes.
Yes, in those days.
Eduard, just, I'm getting confused here. Was this before what we're talking about now? You were at the Royal Academy of Dance in London. Was this before you started on the Cecchetti system?
No, I was taught in the Cecchetti system right from the beginning. That was Jennifer Lowe taught me.
That's right, because Jennifer Hart, as we know her.
Yes.
Because I know, as I said, she was a great believer in the Cecchetti system. So you were already a Cecchetti dancer then?
Yes, yes. You know, if one looks at it very carefully, dance training is dance training.
Mm-hmm. Fair
enough. A good ballet teacher is a good ballet teacher, whatever style they teach in. Where there are many links with the Cecchetti is, for instance, the Vaganova school. And I went to Russia a few years ago, watched Vaganova classes. And, you know, they've developed their own style, but they all come from the same source, from Cecchetti. Mm-hmm. I think even the RAD has that as the source in the early days.
Right.
So the links are always there. But in the end, you know, some people lift their legs higher than other schools, or they have a different way of choosing the bodies, specific bodies, to become professional. Mm-hmm. Like in the Vagana school, they've changed in the way they choose the dancers now. I mean, in earlier days, if a dancer had legs that looked like they were slightly... knock knees, they'd say, oh, she's going to have a problem, you know, she's not going to be able to stand in first position. But then you go to these places like Vaganova school and you see quite a few dancers with knock knees and they were chosen, you know, but because of the shape and the suppleness of the body.
Mm-hmm. And the male body, of course, is so different, isn't it, really? What choreographers and those sort of things might want out of a male body. And you apparently had what it takes.
I think, you know, if you have the specific height.
Yeah. What is your height, Eduard?
I think I'm 6 foot. You know, I think I'm a little bit less now.
I think you're a little over 6 foot,
over
6 foot.
Surely. Probably, yes. I became taller over the years, you mm-hmm. know, as I yes. pulled myself up more.
Yes, as your posture was forced to improve.
Yes.
And Phyllis, I'm trying to remember, she was petite, wasn't she?
She was shorter than I was, but on point, you know, that
yes.
makes a big difference
yes,
when they're
course.
On point and when you partner. It was an ideal height for me to partner. you know, it, everything worked fine. Mm-hmm. Although I did dance with other dancers who were taller. Some people like Claire Shepherd-Wolson and Katika van Vlaanderen, who was another one of my favorites.
Oh, gosh.
Who yes. I danced with.
Let's have another piece of music, Edvard. And now we have the famous Giselle. I think I'm right in saying Giselle because it's such a favorite of so many people. And this is the Act Two Pas de Deux from Giselle.
Thank you.
That's the pas de deux from Act Two of the ballet Giselle by Adolphe Adam. And I think Edward Kraling, who's my guest today, said what a lovely ballet it is. And I think we all agree whenever it shows here, we all flock along to see it. There's something about it. And I think I read somewhere it's possibly one of the oldest ballets in the repertoire, I think, Giselle.
Oh, yes, from the 1800s.
Yes, from the 1800s, that's right. You know, we were talking about your life in London briefly, but you went all over the show. I see you've been to Zimbabwe, to Los Angeles. You have certainly traveled a lot, haven't you, Edward, as a dancer initially?
Yes, I think I was lucky, but I was really more homebound most of the time. I think the times when I guested was in the later, when I became an older dancer.
Mm-hmm. When you say an older dancer, does that mean you were still dancing longer than you should have been?
Well, yes, you know, as I think I mentioned earlier on when we were doing the Les Corsaires Pas de Deux, mm-hmm. which I was 40, yes. And Phyllis was 44 at the time. So yeah. It was really before we both actually retired. Mm-hmm. And then when I retired, I had to think of what I wanted to do. And the suggestion was from David that, you know, because we already had one choreologist, which is a dance notator.
Yes, I want to ask you about that, Edward. It was a word that I'd not really come across. One knows about choreography, but choreology is new to me.
It's actually an old word. It was later changed to Benish movement notation.
Because Benish movement.
The Benish couple, they invented this particular style of dance notation. I mean, that's another episode to talk about, different forms of dance notation.
But then I want you to just explain a little bit about how do you notate dance?
Well, you've got the music stave. Mm-hmm. And all these movements are written on the music stave. There are hundreds and hundreds of different little signs. And the three basic signs, it's a dot, a vertical line, and a horizontal line. And those three dots, three basic signs become a myriad, as I say, millions of different signs. Okay. And the way you use them. And, you know, because you can show the phrasing and, you know, because it's written on the music stave, it also goes so perfectly with the music.
With the music itself.
Yes.
So that is in itself an art, isn't it? Choreology.
Yes, it is in itself an art. And I mean, it took 3 years to study. And basically that you do 2 years of full study, and then the third year is due to do your master project, which is notating a full ballet, and then that gets examined. And I was fortunate to do my apprenticeship in choreology with the Royal Ballet, and that was in Kenneth Macmillan and in his rehearsals. So, you know,
fortunate
it was
indeed.
Yeah. Yes, and Monica Mason was also the assistant. She was a ballet mistress at the time. And when I left to come back to South Africa, that was the whole idea. They were sad in a way because I'd gotten on so well with them, and they actually wanted for me to take over from Monica Parker, who was the choreologist for Kenneth Macmillan all those years.
And you weren't tempted?
I was tempted, but, you know, the company from here, they paid for me, and I was destined to come back.
And choreography, Edward, have you ever choreographed
ballets? Early days, David believed in giving everybody a chance. We had a little bit of experimental choreography, and then, you know, we actually did it in the little theater here in Artscape, did those performances with projects. But somehow, you know,
it didn't click with you.
It didn't finally click because, I mean, we were so busy with dancing all the time, and we had a marvelous choreographer with us, Veronica Paper. You know, she was extraordinary.
What a career she's had choreographer.
And so versatile.
Mm. And still going strong.
Yes, yes.
It's amazing. It's obviously to do with how fit you are when you are a dancer that keeps you going. I mean, look at you and look at Veronica.
I think also when you're involved in something like dance, it's your passion for your art.
Yes.
That keeps you going.
Right. Gosh, so how many choreographies have we seen of Veronica Papers over the years?
Gosh.
And is there a big difference? Here comes a possible stupid question, Edward. Is there a big difference between choreography and choreology?
Well, choreology is writing down.
It's actually writing down
the choreography. But I was also very fortunate when I was with Dutch National for quite a while to do different styles of choreography there, which was more often sometimes, it was classical in a sense, but a mixture of classical and contemporary influences, especially with Rudy van Dantzig's ballets.
Okay. You were in Holland for a while, weren't you, with the Dutch,
yes,
the Dutch company?
Yes, yes. But then, you know, David wrote me a letter. I was
going when to you say David, by the way, I just
David
want to clear
Poole.
This. David Poole, yes.
And he actually said to me, Phyllis misses you.
Oh,
so
really?
I think it was we had that partnership then already. It was during the time when we were, you know, dancing, and she had another partner from the Paris Opera who was an incredible dancer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she just felt that she and that tempted me that I to come back with Phyllis. I had great opportunities with other partners in Dutch National, but I always have regrets.
Well,
you know, shouldn't I have?
Yes,
you know,
yes. Anyway, you did, and for a jolly good reason as well. Now we're going to take another piece of music. This is Don Quixote, the pas de deux from Don Quixote by Ludwig Minkus. Is there a story behind this, Edward?
Veronica wrote a wonderful production of Don Q, the full-length ballet, and choreographed on Phyllis and myself in that. And it was such a wonderful feeling to with all that Spanish style in it. Although I was not a Spanish dancer, I just loved the feeling of it. And the choreography was just so remarkable, you know, to dance.
Well, here's a reminder for you.
Thank you.
That was music by Ludwig Minkus from his ballet Don Quixote, the pas de deux therefrom. And I'm talking to the ballet dancer, the retired ballet dancer, the distinguished ballet dancer, Edward Kraling. It's lovely to talk to you, Edward. You mentioned you're not a Spanish dancer, because we know that's the discipline and all that is quite different. And when it comes to modern scores, modern dance, did you get involved in that at all? Or were you always strictly classical?
I was always strictly classical. I was never trained in any modern style. I think students who were trained late in the ballet school mm-hmm. had a contemporary dance,
right.
Martha
That's
Graham style versions thereof. Mm-hmm. But I never had the opportunity, although I have had in London tried during the time when I was studying the choreology there. I used to go to Sunday classes and do contemporary stuff as well. But somehow, you know, it takes quite a lot. It's harder than you think, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. Especially if being well trained as a classical dancer in the first place must be rather difficult to branch out.
To break down.
Yes, to break down.
To break down, yeah. Because, you know, we're very staid in our posturing, whereas contemporary dance is really unfolding the body.
Yes, you're doing that here in the studio. Anyway, and now that you're retired, Edward, do you find physically you still quite, did that physicalness stay with you for quite a while after you'd stopped dancing professionally?
Yes, I think so. I think once the dancer, you're always the dancer.
Yes.
You feel it, you know.
And you can see retired ballet dancers in their posture, both men and women, upright, erect.
Yes, and also, you know, I can bend down and tie my shoelaces without bending my knees.
Till to this day.
So, you know, that's what you have left over.
Right, exactly. But then with the retirement settling in and all that, do you keep an active interest in ballet here in Cape Town, for example? Do you go and see the ballets?
When I can, yes, mm-hmm. when I can. Of course, you know, it's a question of money these days.
I'm
you
sure.
know, the older you get and retire, not, you know, having been paid as a dancer all those years, not as a big star, but, you know, as a company member, was never enough. So one's got to watch the pennies, you know.
It's sad that, isn't it? Because, you know, you were at the top of your game, so to speak, when you were a principal there. And like the musicians who are at the top of their game, they certainly don't earn what they should earn.
Yeah. I think, you know, if you were an international dancer, and I mean, you were guesting everywhere, they earn big money.
Oh, do they? Okay.
So even although if they dance for companies permanently and they have opportunities to guest outside of that, they get paid a lot of money.
Okay. Yeah. And so, Edward, what do you do now? Are you just fully retired and relaxing?
Gosh, yes. I have been thinking of, writing my memoirs down. I have recently just started.
I hope you do, may I say.
But it is quite interesting because, you know, you write down something down the one day and the next day you remember it differently. Not in that it is different, but you remember different things
about it.
About it. So you've got to add on. So it's going to take quite a few years.
Well, I hope you stick at it because it'll help young ballet dancers as well to read about you, the life you led in those days, and the sort of joy that ballet can bring to people, whether you're a dancer or a member of the audience. So I insist you carry on writing it.
Thank you.
But listen, we have to end there now. It's been so special talking to you about your career. And we're going to end with the pas de deux, the balcony pas de deux from Romeo and Juliet by Prokofiev, which I have to say is one of my favorite ballets. And I'm sure you'll agree. You must have been very happy in the role of Romeo.
That was one of my favorite roles.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you which your favorite role was, but I thought you've done all the big ones, so it might be difficult. But Romeo and Juliet is up there.
It's definitely up there. Yes.
I've been talking to Edward Kraling. As we listen to this pas de deux, Edward, thank you very much, and don't forget the book.
Thank you. Yes, I will remember.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.